You are listening to an American Free Press podcast.
Joining me on the line is Victor Thorne and Pete Papaheraklis, who have just compiled and edited a great new book called America's Racial Powder Keg, How a Violent Dependency State Has Been Created Within the Black Community. Victor and Pete, thanks for joining us today.
Great to be here, Dave.
Hi, Dave.
Victor, it's been a little while since you put out a book. Let me ask you this. Why this book? Why America's Racial Powder Keg? What was the impetus behind this book coming out?
Well, if you look at the major news stories of late last year and even coming into the beginning of this year, it's obvious that the biggest issue facing this country right now is race. When you look at all the brouhaha that surrounded Trayvon Martin and Michael Brown down there in Ferguson and the black guy up in New York City, and everything with Bill de Blasio and Al Sharpton and Eric Holder and Barack Obama, that all you hear from the grievance industry, these people that have gotten fabulously wealthy from the black plight, is how bad it is for the blacks today. And this book here, more than any other, I think, addresses this issue in a way that's, first of all, not politically correct. In other words, you can look at CNN or Fox News or CBS, but all you get is a mamby-pamby version of things. And this book here has the courage to address these issues head-on. And when I keep hearing over and over again about how horrible it is for blacks in this country, especially those in the projects, you know, look at the projects. And I think, well, they have microwaves, CD players, they have DVD players, cable TV and internet, and they all walk around in $200 Michael Jordan sneakers. They have heat and running water, and some of them have cars. All of them have cell phones, video games, and people in the projects today live better than kings did in the 18th century. So what is so bad today with the black plight, the so-called black plight? The reason we hear is, well, because things are so bad and the cops treat them so badly and the whites are holding them down, that's why they turn violent. That's why they have these problems with being rapists and murderers and arsonists and thieves and so forth. This book here puts to rest all of these silly notions about white guilt and the white man holding blacks down and so forth. So if ever there was a book that people needed, and I mean needed, to address this issue, America's Racial Powder Keg is the one.
And of course, Pete is joining you in the interview because we could say that Pete is kind of a co-author here, right?
Exactly.
Okay. Pete, a lot of the listeners are going to be familiar with your writing and your views because we've done a lot of radio together. Are the blacks downtrodden? Do they have it bad?
I don't know how much more I could add to what Victor said. I mean, they have all these things that he mentioned. So by what standards do they have it bad? They get everything they need. They get more than 75% of the world as far as living standards, you know, and most of them have equal, if not better, living standards than a lot of white Americans. Short answer, no, of course they don't have it bad.
They really don't have any reason to complain.
No, of course they don't have any reason to complain. But, you know, the media and the academia, and we've all been, since at least the civil rights movement, you know, we've all been, taught of how badly the blacks have been treated due to slavery and how they're owed all these reparations and all that. So I think that that attitude has carried through in their behavior.
Let me add to this, Dave, that I think to really put the whole situation in context is that slavery still exists in America today. Now, people are going to say, what do you mean slavery still exists? And it does exist today. It truly exists today. But the people that own the slaves, the masters of the slaves, aren't so-called white crackers down in the South. The biggest slave owners today in America are Barack Obama and Eric Holder and Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson. And what they've done to blacks is that if we go back to slavery days, the slaves working there, they had their homes provided for them, shelter provided, they had clothes provided, and food provided. Today in the projects, they have their shelter provided, their clothes provided, their food provided via welfare and food stamps. The big difference is that on the plantation, the blacks had a purpose. They worked. They worked for a living. They had a reason to get up in the morning. In the projects, there's no work. So what Obama and Eric Holder and everybody, all of the white liberals in the civil rights movement has done is they've eliminated a sense of purpose in the blacks. So what we have today is the plantation is the government, and the masters on the plantation are Obama and Holder and Reverend L and Jesse Jackson. They're the crackers. They're the ones that are cracking the whips on the blacks because they're not allowing them to even have a purpose as a human being. They're just saying you're beneath even going out and having to work. So in nature, what happens to an animal or a tribe of animals that absolutely doesn't go out and hunt or look for food? They die. They've been eliminated because nature does that. Yet on the plantation, the government plantation run by Obama, they've completely reversed nature by taking away any incentive to go out and hunt or look for food. So the disservice being done by these people is that the blacks today in the projects are slaves, slaves that are run and owned by other blacks in order to get votes. So that's a vital concept that everybody needs to understand. And when you start hearing about white guilt, you say, wait a second, we're not the ones holding them down in the projects. It's the blacks and the white liberals that are doing it. So to me, it's vitally important.
Yeah, that's a great point. Really a terrific point. It's so true. Pete, should we pay the blacks reparations?
You know, it's funny you asked the question because I was just going to add that to what Victor said, which is the fact that we do pay them reparations, you know, ever since, you know, LBJ's Great Society, you know, projects there with the welfare and what have you. You know, what we're saying by giving this money is that, in fact, we do owe them reparations. And I think that's the message that they get, you know, and that's what reinforces their attitude that, hey, you know, we're getting paid all this money, which means, you know, that, you know, Whitey, in fact, was guilty for what he did to us and that kind of thing. Yeah, of course we shouldn't. But the fact that we do, I think, reinforces this attitude that they got it coming, that it's owed to them for the wrongs that were committed towards them, against them.
Should they pay us reparations?
Well, you know, when you add it all up, it comes down to, if you look at what we've done for them versus what they have done, I think when you tally it all up, it really comes to that they owe us reparations.
You know, and when we go back to this slavery analogy, the one thing that people could argue is they could say back in the slavery days, they couldn't escape. Today in the projects in America, somebody has the ability to escape their plight. And I would answer, yes, they do. But here's the problem. If there's a kid in the projects and he goes to school and he studies hard and he speaks English instead of Ebonics and he tries to succeed, guess what all the other blacks do to him? They call him an Uncle Tom, and they call him a Whitey, and they call him a sellout. And what they do is they steal any incentive from this kid to try to succeed, to try to get out of the projects, on top of beating him up or anything else. So the heroes in the hood today are rappers, drug dealers, pimps, convicts, gangsters. Why doesn't Barack Obama, who should be utterly embarrassed and ashamed of himself, that he's doing a greater disservice to blacks than any member of the KKK could ever do to blacks? And the reason why is that he has his bully pulpit. Barack Obama's on TV almost every day there is. The guy can't be away from being on TV. He's on there every day. And yet, you never hear him come out and say to the blacks, pull up your pants. Speak English instead of Ebonics. Why doesn't he tell them? The word is ask, A-S-K, ask. It's not axe. You know how stupid all of you sound by saying axe. I want to ask you a question. A-S-K, ask. Say the word ask. But he won't do this. He won't tell him to pull up his pants. He won't tell him, don't be like these gangster drug dealers or rappers that you see on TV. And then even with like voter IDs, he says, oh, no, the blacks, they can't go out and get voter IDs. Well, in this book, I interviewed a black man, and he said, do you know how demeaning this is to blacks, that they're so feeble and so incompetent that they can't, within 4 years of the last election, one time go down to the DMV and say, I would like to get an ID. So what it is, the racism of diminished expectations. Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson and Obama and all of them are saying to their own people, you're so feeble, you can't do anything unless the big pimp daddy of government is there to hold your hand and help you. And it's just truly appalling.
that's their constituency, basically, and they're not doing anything to help them. They're not obviously saying that Michael Brown creature was wrong for going into that convenience store and doing what he did. Trayvon Martin was wrong for doing what he did prior to that incident with Zimmerman. Any of these matters, not one of them have ever gotten up and cast any blame on the real criminals. And that is disturbing to a lot of people. You guys, I mean, we've known each other for several years, and I'm usually not very optimistic or positive that things are going to get better, but I really believe that, and I could be wrong, of course, but I believe that seems like with this Michael Brown matter and how these animals had reacted in Ferguson, Missouri, and around the country, that people are starting to wake up and see them for who they really are. Pete, do you think that might be right?
I think it's definitely right, and I think they overplayed their card. And I also think that, you know, that incident with the two cops that were killed in New York, you know, as terrible as it was, it blew up in their face. Because, you know, while they were trying to build all this momentum about how terrible white cops are and encouraging all these protesters to have slogans like kill cops and all this stuff, I mean, they were really getting carried away. And then when those two cops were shot, it just blew up in their face. I mean, I don't even know if de Blasio is going to make it through the year or I think he's going to be gone. I mean, the police is so much against them, and public opinion, you know, the media was forced to speak out against this, and a lot of prominent people like Giuliani and Bloomberg and Pataki and New York officials, you know, spoke out and took the side of the police, and a good deal of the media, if not all the media, were forced to do the same. So it really made not only de Blasio look really bad, but, you know, Al Sharpton's become a laughingstock. I mean, his own people walk out of, you know, speeches when he gets up to speak. Black people just actually turn their back and walk away on him. So I think it's really turned around and has woken up a lot of people that maybe were feeling that something wasn't right. Now they kind of woke up and say, yeah, you know what? I mean, this is ridiculous. And they're speaking out. A lot of people that were silent before are speaking up now, you know.
Right, the silent majority. Victor, you agree with that?
Well, for sure. And Pete bringing up the whole incident with the cops, we've had discussions about this, and I've reached the conclusion that, you know, with so much hatred of the cops, if you look at what's going on, you know, we hear so much about the police state. Well, I've reached the conclusion that the police state is necessary where the police state exists. In other words, if we don't have a police state around the projects and the ghettos and so forth, that is the only barrier between them and people living outside of those areas. So, you know, instead of demeaning the police, now I'm not talking about the surveillance state and, you know, listening to phone calls and tapping into our computers and all that. That's a surveillance state matter. I'm talking about the police state, and I want the police state to exist where it is, because if it didn't, if the New York City cops, all 35,000 of them, went away, can you imagine the melee that would happen up there? Or in Chicago or Watts out in Los Angeles or anywhere else. So, you know, this is the barricade between white America and these people that act like Michael Brown, that, you know, goes in and strong arms the shopkeeper, steals cigars, walks down the middle of the street, tells the cop, F you, you know, you're too much of a pussy to shoot me. I mean, is this the kind of people we want running through our neighborhoods? Well, the answer is no. That's why we need this wall between us. So, you know, to me, the biggest racists around are Obama and Holder and, you know, Al Sharpton against blacks. They're the racists against blacks, because with affirmative action and all these quotas and multi-generational welfare, again, what they're saying is our people, blacks, are so worthless, they can't do anything. We need to hold their hands. And, you know, some of the interviews in this book, In America's Racial Powder Keg, you know, are from black leaders that are sick and tired of the race baiters and the grievance industry. And they're saying, starting with LBJ's Great Society in the mid-60s, it was all downhill. Up until then, blacks, you know, they still had their family together. They still went to church. They had jobs. But once LBJ came in and all the white liberals, they destroyed the black family. And now it's to the point where I think there's no return. Luckily, as Pete said, America is waking up and seeing these people for what they are instead of, you know, through rose-colored glasses.
Right. You said, do we want these people walking down the street like Michael Brown? And I would say, yes, we do. Is that bad?
Well, that was the biggest incident where it really woke people up, you know, and saw what was going on. And, you know, another incident that I think was the real lightning rod was right after Obama entered office in 2009. Well, in November 2008, down in Philadelphia, you had the Black Panthers. And they were standing out in front of the Philadelphia voting station in their fatigues, in their jack boots. They were holding their billy clubs, and they were intimidating white voters. Well, they were actually found guilty of that. When Eric Holder came into office as the attorney general, all he had to do was sentence them. They'd already been convicted. All he had to do was give them a sentence, and he dropped the case and let them go. And at that point, everybody in this country, like I did, just said, oh my God, we got 4 years of a nightmare on our hands here. And unbelievably, you know, all through 2007 and 2008 in American Free Press, I wrote article after article after article on Obama warning people, if you put this guy in office, you have a nightmare on your hands. And what I've realized is that any white person that voted for Obama is like a cattle that deliberately walks into a slaughterhouse. They voted for their own demise and their own destruction, and we're seeing it now. We're seeing it in all of these places, like in Ferguson. The chickens have come home to roost, and this is what white people voted for when they put Obama and Holder and their ilk in the White House. I mean, how many times has Al Sharpton visited the White House? Like 86 times or something like that. It's
what
incredible.
You mean?
I think it's 60.
0.6 is too much, right, Pete? 0.6?
Yeah. 60 times. 60 times.
I wanted to say two things, but one is, Victor, you mean the white people who voted from the second time, right? Not the first time.
The
people
even
who
the
voted
first time.
No, come on. They get a pass because of the Hope and Change thing.
No, I don't give them a pass on the first time even.
Damn!
You know? There were so many red flags. So many red flags. And, you know, I'll give them to you right now. There's three characteristics of Obama and his ilk. The first one is they're all communists, or at the very least, socialists. These guys are commies, and it goes back for decades and decades within this hardcore black movement. They're all Marxists. The second thing is that they all believe in this black liberation theology, black supremacy over not only whites but any other race, that their God is black, everything, black supremacy. Obama sat in Reverend Wright's pews for 20 years listening to this crap, and he absorbed
it. It's more than just black supremacy, Victor, I'm sorry. It's actually advocating killing whites, killing anyone that, it says, what is the James Cone's philosophy part of it is, we won't accept any God that doesn't endorse killing white people.
Exactly, exactly. And this is what Obama sucked up for 20 years in Reverend Wright's church. And the last thing is they hate America, black liberation theology. They hate the founding fathers, the Constitution, our customs and traditions and heritage, and our people. They hate our people. They hate the people that made America. You know, I've even heard people, you know, white people say, oh, Jeremiah Wright, he was really a good guy. He was? How the hell is Jeremiah Wright a good guy? You know, goddamn America. Well, I don't say goddamn America. I don't give anybody a pass for voting for this guy because there were too many warning signals and too many signs. All of the articles in Frontman, the book called Frontman, all appeared before the 2008 election. There was no excuse for bringing this tribe into the White House. And look what they've done now to our culture. I mean, despite everything else economically and politically, they're destroying the culture of what made this country. And it's inexcusable.
Yeah, and there is no doubt, no matter how you want to look at it, how you want to parse it, it was white Europeans who created America. There's really not much you could say about that. That's it, period, pure, plain, and simple. These are the people who came here. These are the people who built this country up. Does it seem like, though, that the white people in America now, a lot of them, are allowing these blacks and Jews and anybody else who doesn't like the fact that the whites created America for some reason? Pete, do you think that white people in this country are just sitting back and letting it happen?
Well, you know, white people are just, you know, been bombarded with this white guilt, as that we spoke earlier. And, you know, they've been forced to just focus on all the terrible things that whites have allegedly done of oppressing everybody around the world and this and that and the other. But as you pointed out, you know, the whites built this country and whites created Western civilization. from whole cloth. I mean, everything about it comes from weights, and that's been downplayed. I mean, all the inventions, you know, philosophy, science, poetry, everything, you know, comes from the white people. You know, what blacks fail to realize because they've been propagandized in this way is that, you know, all whites had them as slaves. Instead, they don't focus on the fact that whites were the ones that liberated them from slavery. They were slaves already. You know, the whole world was slaves. Slavery was an institution that was, you know, was around for thousands of years. We here, America was one of the first countries to actually liberate, outlaw slavery. And it wasn't the blacks that liberated themselves. It was 600 or so thousand whites that got killed in the Civil War in order to liberate the blacks. Yeah. So that's not focused on. It's just like, you know, look at all the terrible things you've done to me. These terrible things are, you know, whites weren't responsible for slavery. Slavery existed.
And
you know,
still,
you
still
asked
exists.
That, you asked before. Yeah, well, you asked before if they owe us reparations. Yeah, I mean, when you add these things up, when you add the fact, like I said, that we liberated them, they didn't fight to liberate themselves. I mean, most countries, you know, Greece, for instance, we were enslaved to the Turks for 400 years. We had a revolution. We fought. Thousands of us got killed in order to liberate ourselves. Well, the blacks didn't liberate themselves. You know, emancipation was handed to them on a silver platter after, you know, hundreds of thousands of whites killed themselves. And not to mention all the reparation money that's been given to them, you know, since 1965. So why do we owe all this money and all this reparations? I don't get it.
We know who controls the airwaves, and I'm sure that has a lot to do with it. Victor, let me ask you this, because I like to ask this question when I'm interviewing somebody about a book. Why should somebody buy this book?
Well, the primary reason is, for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. Well, when we're so inundated with propaganda from the CNNs and the CBSs and MSNBCs and NBC so forth, that we need something to counteract it, something that speaks in an honest manner, a straightforward manner. There's, you know, over 40 articles in this book, well-researched. This is something that not only each person listening should buy for themselves, they should either give the copy then to someone else or buy a copy for a family member or somebody at work or a cousin, whatever. You know, everybody, over Thanksgiving, I'll bet you everybody in this country was talking about the race issue with Ferguson and so forth. And there's so much misinformation out there peddled by the media that this book, someone could hand it to them and say, okay, here's the real story. You know, just a couple examples. Pete is the one that first made me aware of this statistic, the best statistic in the world that I use all the time when I talk to people, and it dumbfounds them. I say, in the 2005 Department of Justice report called The Criminal Victimization in the United States, black men raped 37,460 white women. That's 37,000 plus white women raped by black men.
In 1 year, right?
In 1 year.
2007, I think it was, Victor.
Yeah, well, I think the report was from 2005. But
okay.
Anyway, the white men raped that same year less than 10 black women. Okay, so the percentage rate higher is 3,700% higher for black men raping white women than white men raping black women. Now, when I say, why isn't the National Organization of Women, why aren't they taking out ads on the airwaves or in magazines or on the internet and running this information and saying, let's see, the National Organization of Women, we really do care about rape. We think rape is terrible. We want to prevent rape. So let's see. One of the biggest ways to prevent rape is to tell white women, stay away from black men because you have a 3,700% higher rate of rape by black men than black women do from white men. Why isn't this discussed? Nobody I've ever mentioned this to has ever heard this statistic. Yet 50% of the population is women. Every woman in America should know this statistic, and they should say, oh my God, I think I need to stay away from black men because I'm going to be raped. I have a much higher percentage of a chance to be raped by them. You know, Pete and me discussed one time, he did a little survey where he was talking to women, and he said, if you're walking down a street at night alone, and there's like three or four black men coming the other direction, do you A, keep walking in that direction, or B, cross over to the other side? And what he really came up with was that the liberal women said they would keep walking towards the black men. When he asked them why, she said, well, I don't really want to be seen as being a racist. So it's preferable to be raped than to be seen as a racist. The conservative women said, well, I'm going to cross over to the other side. At least maybe I have a chance of not getting raped.
Pretty amazing. And I think it was 2005. And also, I think the reason that they say less than 10, because if it's less than 10, it could actually, Pete, correct me if I'm wrong, but it could actually be zero, right?
Yes, it could. Less than 10 means that it doesn't register. It has to be at least 10, being that they count them by the thousands. It has to be less than 10 in order to even register. So it could be 1, 2, 3, 5, could be zero.
That would be so powerful if it was zero. That would add so much more to it to say that a white guy has never, in 2005, they have never raped a black woman.
Yes.
There's a lot of reasons for that.
Yeah, well, you know, the thing, as Victor pointed out, you know, it's when you say it to people, it just their eyes just kind of glaze over and they try to change the subject or something. I mean, even with 10, it's so powerful when you compare it to 37,500 that the difference is insignificant if it was 0 or 10. But I guess if it was actually 0, then you would think that it might tend to wake them up a little bit more, although they should wake up with just a regular statistic, shouldn't they?
Right.
Yeah, and you know, and speaking of statistics, here's another one. During the Michael Brown thing down in Ferguson, we heard, well, these racist white cops, it's like an epidemic, them killing black men. Well, AFP started looking into this. And depending on how far back you want to go, that over the last couple decades, black-on-black murder has totaled anywhere from 250 to 350,000 people. Now, how many white cops have killed black men in that same time span? A couple dozen, maybe 100? I'm sure the 90-plus percent, if not more, were justified. So you have, you know, a couple dozen murders or killings versus, let's say, 300, 350,000. 93% of all blacks that are killed by other blacks, as Rudy Giuliani correctly said. So where is the real problem? Is it with cops that are trying to erect this barricade to keep these people where they belong so they don't terrorize the rest of society? Or is it with white cops? No, it's not. It's in those communities where 70% of the mothers are unwed. They all have illegitimate children. They're encouraged to grow up to be like gangsters or rappers. Why isn't Barack Obama and Eric Holder informing them there can be a different way? But
yeah,
they're not.
Yeah, Victor, you had him nailed from the beginning. Pete, you remember, Victor, going back to when Obama was inaugurated, how he was trying to warn people about him. And
absolutely.
And you did nail him. But I really think, Victor, still, you should give those poor people, and I know a few of them quite closely, who voted from the first time because they had hope, you know, because some people used to have hope, and because of him, they have no hope anymore.
That's the funny thing is that, you know, 6 years now down the road, it's hard for me to fathom how anyone could have bought. I mean, if I was black, I could understand how you could buy into it. You know, hope and change and first black president. But beyond that, I can't fathom. It's like a magician sawing a woman in half or watching professional wrestling and watching some guy do whatever and say like, oh, boy, I really believe that he cut that woman in half. Well, no, it's a trick. It's all magic. You know, Obama used this neuro-linguistic programming. He basically hypnotized people. He put them into a spell and made them believe this hope and change stuff. Well, now 6 years later, almost everybody has come to the realizations like, oh my God, this hope and change, what a catastrophe this was. There were a lot of people that didn't vote for Obama in 2008. Why were their eyes opened to this catastrophe, this train wreck that we have? It's like falling for a magic trick that's so obvious that it's not real. It's all an illusion, but they fell for it. And it just boggles my mind how that can happen. It really does.
You know, Obama insists now, without blushing, I might add, that race relations have gotten much better since he took over.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like that knockout game, that's really a good sign when, you know, a 70-year-old white woman is walking down the street and some 16-year-old black thug runs up from behind and belts her in the head. And her noggin knocks off the concrete. So that's a good sign of race relations getting better.
Yeah.
Victor, one other thing, you know, when you were talking about the black, supposedly the white cops killing all these black people as they want us to believe. You know, one of the things that's not mentioned in that, I mean, they'll focus on cases that, well, like Ferguson and Trayvon Martin and what have you. Well, not Trayvon Martin, but Eric Gardner or what have you. And, you know, they'll focus on the few cases where the white cop was involved, but they don't focus on all the cases where black cops kill white people. Hardly anybody's ever heard of, and this happened at the same time as the Michael Brown shooting, both in the actual shooting and the grand jury results. Okay, they both came out around the same time as Michael Brown, and this was Dylan Taylor in Salt Lake City, a white guy that basically hadn't done any strong arm robberies, hadn't broken the law in any way, and he got killed. He got shot by a black cop, and the black cop, the grand jury decided not to prosecute. That was blatantly more controversial than the Ferguson, because with Michael Brown, you know, of course he was guilty, but this other guy wasn't. So there's so much of it that's the other way around with black on white cops killing, but no, you never hear any of that.
Yeah, that's right. Now the book is 148 pages. Is that right, Victor?
I believe so, yeah.
Okay, 148 pages. And for the listeners, everything we're talking about here is in the book, except in much greater detail. Victor, anything else you think the listeners might want to know about this book before they go out and buy it?
As we said previously, this is the counterforce against everything that's been inundated against us over the last, you know, not only couple years, but couple decades. This is what we need. This is a book, I think, that can save America. This is a book that can turn us back around and be on the right path. You know, Pete made a great point earlier talking about how whites created Western civilization. Well, if you look at a book of inventions, a history book, and it says, well, of the 1,000 greatest inventions, 999 of them were created by white men. Well, if you brought that up in a conversation, some people would say, oh, that's racist to point that out. Well, why can't we take pride? Why can't we be proud of our accomplishments, of what we've done? Of these 1,000 inventions, they've made society better for us. You know, to always be made to feel shame about who we are, this book doesn't fall into that trap. This book says, you know, we have a right to stand up for what we are, and I just think it's one of the best books I've ever put out, you know, and I only wrote, you know, less than half of it, but I compiled it and edited it, and I'm extremely proud of it. Everybody needs to get this book because it's the wake-up call that counteracts all of the propaganda that's being directed against us.
Pete, you want to say something?
Yeah, well, to add to these great things that the white people did, but to bring up what I said before, one of the great contributions that the white man has made in Western civilization is to end slavery. White man ended slavery. He wasn't the black man. He wasn't the, you know, the Orientals. He wasn't the Arabs. It was the white people that ended slavery. You know, in the case of the Civil War, 600,000 plus of them died in doing that. You know, let's give some credit where credit is due.
And also, just to add to that right at the end of the show here, is that everybody has seen that miniseries called Roots. And that was the most deceitful television show ever put on because it has the white men running through the jungles and trying to track down Kunta Kinte. Nothing could be further from the truth. What happened was that the ships that went over there, the vast majority of them Jewish traders, they went up, they landed on the shore, they opened up the doors, and basically the black slave owners herded their black slaves onto the white man's ship, onto the Jewish slave trader ship. They got a couple cases of rum or some beads or whatever in return, but even the depiction of how the blacks were quote-unquote captured never happened. The black slave owners in Africa herded their own black slaves onto the ships and said adios. And the most important point is that the minute that any of these blacks got on the ships heading towards America, at that very minute, their lives improved at least 1,000% that minute, because going to America was infinitely better than staying in Africa.
Yeah, obviously.
Victor, one thing about the Roots that you mentioned, and I'm sure most people don't know this, is Alex Haley, the author of the book, claimed that this was, he tracked down his own ancestry and came down to, went back to Kunta Kinte and all this stuff. Okay, well, all that was totally fabricated because he plagiarized the book from another book written by some Jewish author, I forget his name, called The African. It was a novel. And he was sued for this, and he settled out of court. He paid, I don't know, $50,000, $500,000, I don't remember the figure. But he was sued by this author for plagiarizing his book and paid for it. So the whole thing is fiction, totally fiction.
Nobody calls him to the carpet because it's part of their whole plan. And it ties into Michael Brown. We know that whole hands up, don't shoot thing is a bunch of crap because he didn't have his hands up. but they're still using that, and they're still referring to Alex Haley's book Roots, even though it was all lies.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, there's a better slogan, you know, for hands up, don't shoot. You've heard it, right?
Go ahead.
Pants up, don't loot. And look, as far as Alex Haley, you know, if you go to Annapolis, the city of Annapolis here in Maryland, you know, in the harbor, there's this statue erected of Alex Haley reading out of a book to these children and what have you, a bronze statue, and all these plaques all around the harbor with all these quotes from the Mandinka tribe and what have you. And, you know, under the statue, it says, this is the site where Kunta Kinte came in from Africa after, you know, he was brought in here as a slave and all that. So knowing and having it be documented that this thing was total fabrication, they still erect a statue that's going to be there for forever, perpetuating this lie, knowing that it's a lie.
Exactly. And that's why this book's so important, American Free Press is so important, and the Pardon Review is so important, because no matter what, they are still going to put these things up, even though we know and we can prove it, it's a lie, but it's part of their plan. Folks, get the book, America's Racial Powder Keg, How a Violent Dependency State Has Been Created Within a Black Community. Get smart, get smarter, try to think the way that you need to think in order to break out of this trap that they've placed us in. Victor Thorne, Pete Papa Heracles, thanks so much for spending the time with us today, and looking forward to talking to you real soon.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you, Dave.